This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place, whether you're in the mood for a new season of contemporary dance, a musical journey inspired by global folk music, or a rare performance of Indian classical music by a renowned sitar master. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Marigny Opera Ballet, known for its award-winning original contemporary ballets, is gearing up for a sixth season of dance accompanied by live music. Co-founder and artistic director Dave Hurlburt literally stepped out in faith in 2014 when he purchased the deconsecrated Holy Trinity Catholic Church with a vision of creating a Church of the Arts, which is now the Marigny Opera House. Dave Hurlburt is here with news of an exciting upcoming season. Welcome back.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into your new season, congratulations on your award-winning fifth season. You took home two major awards from Gambit's Tribute to the Classical Arts with works by a rising star choreographer.
Yes, indeed. That's Kellis McSparran-Oldenburg, a dancer with our company. She'll be going into her fifth season this year, and she's also our rehearsal director and choreographer. She's set, I think, about three or four works on the company so far, and will actually be setting a new one on us in the next season.
And one of her big wins was for a full-length ballet, The Follies of 1915.
That was a sold-out sensation. That opened our season last year. And the interesting thing about it is the music is from the New Leviathan Oriental Foxtrot Orchestra. It was the first time we've collaborated with them. And the music was period music from 1915 for sort of a 12-piece ensemble. And the choreography included a lot of social dances from that period. It's when the foxtrot was introduced, or the tango in popular dancing in America.
Now, as you look forward to the upcoming season, what inspires you?
There's several things. One is, I believe all of our dancers are coming back.
Wow.
All 10 of them. We're also going to have two new apprentices. The other thing that inspires me is the ability to perform a work by Paul Taylor. We've been given permission to have Auriole, his 1962 masterpiece. A regisseur from Paul Taylor will be here in New Orleans setting that dance on our company. Auriole is a landmark in modern dance. It helped to revolutionize what was happening in dance as an art form in New York in the 60s. It's often done by the Paul Taylor Dance Company itself, but by other major companies. The Royal Danish Ballet does it, several others. The piece is technically very difficult. It's a dance for five, and the music is classical. It'll be performed by the New Resonance Orchestra. The music is a symphony by William Boyce from the 18th century. What sets Auriole apart from a lot of other dances is the joy in that dance. It's abstract, but you have to remember, in the 60s, modern dance was fairly dreary. It was about social catastrophe. It was agonizing things. It was quite earnest. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this dance appeared in 1962, and it's about joy, and it's to classical music. The dancers are all in white, and the effect is exhilarating.
In addition to the work by Paul Taylor, you have an original take on A Midsummer Night's Dream?
Yes, we're doing Midsummer Night's Dream. That play has been choreographed a number of times. I guess the most famous versions are by George Balanchine and by Sir Frederick Ashton. They both used the typical music from Felix Mendelssohn that most people are quite familiar with. We're starting from scratch. We went back to the Shakespeare play. We created a ballet scenario out of it for our 10 dancers. The piece is going to be choreographed by Derwin May Jr., one of our dancers, and has been with us for several seasons. His ballet background is enhanced by his hip-hop background. It's going to be very interesting choreography.
I'll bet.
Yeah, it will be quite different. This is not going to be a classical ballet. I think it's going to have a real modern and contemporary edge to it that people will find fascinating. And we commissioned brand new music for Midsummer Night's Dream from Tucker Fuller. This will be his fourth ballet for us.
Tucker Fuller is another rising star. Tell us a little bit about him and his musical strengths.
I met Tucker, I guess, about 5 or 6 years ago when he had composed some song cycles that were performed, and I thought they were magnificent. When we did our first full-length ballet, which was Orfeo, in our second season, I wanted to have original music. and I started to talk with Tucker about it. Tucker resisted the idea. He wanted to write songs. He wanted to write vocal music. He had never written anything for dance. And so I tried to help him with a crash course. Tucker ended up studying all of the great ballet scores, Tchaikovsky, Stravinsky, and finally agreed to do it. Orfeo has some of the most beautiful music that's ever been performed at the Marigny Opera House. It was quite a successful ballet.
What else unfolds in this upcoming season?
The season's a big one. In December, we are going to present two Christmas dances. One of them we've produced before. It's Aguas de Dezembro by local choreographer Diogo de Lima. And that is more or less Christmas on the beach in Brazil. That's accompanied by Larry Sieberth and his ensemble. Larry created all of the arrangements for the music for that piece. We're going to have a premiere along with that, and that will be by Kellis McSparren Oldenburg. We're calling it Sacred Harp because it's based on early colonial Christmas music. Their vocal music used to be combined into books called the Sacred Harp. So we're actually using that music thanks to the Boston Camerata, which is going to be supplying us with special arrangements for it. We're going to end the season with Follies of 1915, which I'm really looking forward to. That's one of the happiest things we've ever done.
And as you continue to make great strides as a young dance company, what is your vision for continued growth?
A lot of this is getting people familiar with and excited about the Marigny Opera Ballet. My dream is that we'll tour. I've got a grant application in now to give us the money that would be required to take the company on tour and introduce them to other cities and other dance communities. It's exciting.
Yeah, it sounds very exciting. So when does the new season kick off?
The new season begins October 4th. That's our gala opening night. And it runs all the way through March 29th in 2020.
Marigny Opera Ballet, Artistic Director Dave Herbert, thanks so much.
Thanks again.
More information on the Marigny Opera Ballet and its upcoming sixth season can be found online at marignyoperaballet.org. In the interest of full disclosure, I am a board member of the Marigny Opera Foundation. The award-winning Musaica Chamber Ensemble is gearing up for its final concert of the season with a program of Songs of the Earth, including two new premieres. Musaica violist and president Bruce Owen is here with Dylan Tran, a Loyola composition student and participant in Musaica's composition workshop. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having us, Diane.
Thank you.
This concert comes on the heels of a major win, as your first concert this season, Bruce, was awarded Best Chamber Music Concert of 2018 at Gambit's Tribute to the Classical Arts. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks so much. We were very happy about that.
What inspired this program that you call Songs of the Earth?
Every country has its own national folk songs that expresses the identity of that particular country, and we thought that would be really great to feature music that was inspired by these songs. There's so many composers that use this kind of music as a basis for larger pieces.
So what are we likely to hear?
Well, big piece on this concert is the Dvorak String Sextet. Dvorak wrote this piece when he was in his Slavic period. It was right between writing his first and second sets of his Slavonic dances. There are two movements from this piece in particular that have a really strong folk element. The Dumka, which is the second movement, which is kind of brooding, slow movement. Then the Furiant, which is the third movement, which is actually a rapid bohemian dance. Béla Bartók wrote 44 duos for violins, which were transcribed by the violist William Primrose in 1974, and we think they sound really great on two violas. So we're actually playing five of the viola duos. These are all kind of national dances, including a Serbian dance, a Romanian whirling dance, and even an Arabian dance. We wanted to try to make this as worldwide as possible, and Hector Villa-Lobos, who's a really well-known Brazilian composer and has written lots of different chamber music and orchestra pieces, he wrote a duo for violin and viola, which he completed in 1946, and this was during a period when he was writing a lot of music that was based partially on folk and indigenous music from Brazil, and also combining that with other influences, especially from composers like Stravinsky and Debussy.
We're going to travel all around the world.
That is correct.
And you have two new works that are being premiered. One of them is by you, Dylan. How did this work come about?
I submitted a portfolio to Bruce and the people at Musaica for their student composer contest, and I was really lucky to be selected as a participant in 2017. And when I was thinking, you know, what kind of piece do I want to write, I realized there were just tons of fantastic string players in the group, including Bruce. And I just thought, man, I have to write a string quartet. It is called String Quartet No. 1 on Vietnamese themes. As far as the Vietnamese aspect of it goes, my studies in Vietnamese music are kind of part of a larger initiative of mine to reclaim this Vietnamese-American culture of which, you know, my existence is a product. And yet it was something that was kind of kept from me, I feel, and something of which my knowing and learning was discouraged. And one of the natural results of that research, of course, is that I would start to implement Vietnamese musical ideas into my writing and performing.
You've written a work for string quartet, but your instrument is your voice. Tell us about that.
One of the great things about being a singer is that we have this little joke in composition circles anyway, that all other instruments are striving to be like the human voice. So that's kind of an advantage I have already. No offense, Bruce. But I did study composition at Loyola University as well. And a lot of the vocal work was, you know, in part writing. And those kind of things sort of transcend instrument. You know, every piece needs to be written idiomatically for whatever instrument you're writing for. All different musical lines need to cooperate. So it wasn't a huge leap in that sense. Again, it was fantastic to work with these real experts on their instruments. This is my first piece being performed by the ensemble, yes.
Congratulations.
Thanks so much.
Another work making its world premiere is very personal for you, Bruce. I believe it involves a close relative.
My own mother, Molly O'Mara, who's a really wonderful composer. She's a keyboardist and also plays oboe. She lives in New Mexico, and she's written a couple of world premieres for Musaica. This is her latest one, a trio for harp, oboe, and flute based on Irish folk tunes. Her last piece that we played, The Air Was Green, in 2013, that was nominated as Best New Work by Tribute to Classical Arts.
Will your mom be present at the concert?
Yes, yes. She's flying in on the Saturday before the two performances.
That's going to be some concert.
I'm really looking forward to it.
What are your thoughts on Musaica's successes? I believe you're now in your 13th year?
13th, yeah. I can't believe it. One of the things I'm really excited about is that we actually got a grant from the Jazz and Heritage Foundation to support this concert. And I feel like getting that kind of local support for our group is going to make things even better. We're really excited about the future of our group.
Bruce Owen, violist and Musaica founder and composition student. Dylan Tran, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for having us.
Musaica Chamber Ensemble presents Songs of the Earth, Monday, April 22nd in Metairie at Mulholland United Methodist Church, 1201 Metairie Road. And in New Orleans on Thursday, April 25th at St. Charles Avenue Presbyterian Church, 1545 State Street. Both concerts are at 7:30 p.m. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The meditative beauty of Indian classical music comes alive this week with a rare American performance by renowned sitar master Usman Khan, Music of the Mystic. A spiritual concert journey is presented by the Indian Arts Circle of New Orleans. Joining me are Jayashree Rao and Chitra Prasanthkumar. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Diane.
You know, when I think of the Indian Arts Circle, the first thing that comes to my mind is India Fest. But you're here today with another program.
This is Chitra. The program is a wonderful sitar concert by Ustad Usman Khan, who comes from a long lineage of musical heritage. His grandfather and his father were extremely well-known maestros in Indian classical music, pioneered the seven-stringed sitar. And this is a rare concert because when Indian Arts Circle first started in 1994, Usman Khan was our first concert. And 25 years later, he's returning to perform again. So for us, it's very exciting.
What is it about the sitar that is so attractive to audiences?
This is Jayashree. Sitar is probably the most well-known instrument to Western audiences, mainly because of Pandit Ravi Shankar. He brought it in the 60s, so it's much better known than other Indian classical instruments. It is a seven-stringed instrument, started out as what's called Been, B-E-E-N, from 15th century. So Usman Khan's grandfather is the one that converted this to a seven-string instrument.
And that's the sitar we know today.
Yes.
How would you describe Indian classical music?
Indian classical music, particularly the one that's going to be performed by Ustad Usman Khan, is devotional because he believes that the music comes from the divine, and his performances are always aimed to giving back to the divine. So you do not hear a lot of the usual trickeries that I would call, which automatically makes people want to clap and appreciate. But his is truly a meditative form of music and my favorite form of sitar playing. He has been performing for a very long time. He's in his 70s, and he also is very much into propagating his way of performing to the next generations. He has many, many students all over the world. He is the dean of the International School of Fine Arts, which has centers all over the world.
And his style of playing, he combines vocals with instrumental techniques?
Yeah. His lineage also is from vocalists, and his grandfather is the one that switched to the sitar. So you will hear a lot of the lyrical expositions as well as the instrumental tone to it. So it is absolutely going to be a very different kind of sitar performances. I think many people in our audience know and have been to sitar concerts, but Usman Khan's way of performing is truly spiritual, and he aims to perform for himself, meaning reaching towards perfection, if you will, you know, knowing that you can never reach perfection, but not to kind of make the audience jump up and start applauding.
Is this going to be a solo performance, or will he be joined by other musicians?
He will be joined by Pandit Shyam Kane, who is a tabla player of very well-known repute, actually. He trained under Pandit Zakir Hussain and his father, Allah Rakha, from 1975 onwards. He still plays with Zakir Hussain. Pandit Kane actually was influenced by his brother to begin playing the tabla. He began his journey under his brother's guidance and then became a shishya or student of Pandit Zakir Hussain. He does play all over the U.S.
The tabla, this is a drum?
Yes.
And how does the drum complement the sitar?
They actually speak to each other. In Indian classical music, we usually have conversations between the instruments. When, for example, the tabla has a certain beat and the sitar follows it, or the sitar begins and the tabla follows it, they basically speak to each other and complement each other.
What would you say is the best way to enjoy this musical journey?
What I plan to do is leave behind whatever has happened that particular day and allow myself to be completely, totally in body and mind, immerse myself into what's happening on the stage. The sitar will start with a slow tempo, and depending on the artist's mood and what he's perceiving from the audience, that duration of that slow tempo, which is called alap, may go on from few minutes to, you know, many, many more minutes. And eventually, just by the body language, the tabla person will be informed to begin, and then they will start with a rhythmic segment and rhythmic component to it, and generally ends with a more rapid tempo. Even the performers usually never know what's going to happen. So that's the reason we cannot present a particular program so the audience knows what piece is going to be performed. Usually in Western classical music, you know going in who is the composer, who is, you know, all of that.
This is very organic, very spontaneous.
Yes, organic is the right word.
Now, after going on this spiritual journey, what are you hoping audiences will take away from the experience?
May I quote Albinus Prinsigras of the
Trinity Artist Series?
I remember him coming to last year's Bach Around the Clock, and when you posed that same question to him, he mentioned, "I would like for the audience to meet a stranger who is none other than themselves." And I think that is so apt to this performance particularly.
Wow, I remember that. Yeah, it's a powerful quote.
Yeah, absolutely.
We just hope everyone comes and really, really enjoys themselves.
Chitra Prasankumar and Jayashree Rao with the Indian Arts Circle. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Diane.
The Indian Arts Circle of New Orleans presents Music of the Mystic, sitar of Ustad Usman Khan with Pandit Sham Khani. Thursday, April 18th, 7:30 p.m. in the Pharmacy Auditorium at Xavier University. More info is on Facebook. Look for Indian Arts Circle of New Orleans. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.